present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a sign seen in the East Gloucestershire Medical Assessment Unit, read by Charlotte Green.
Visiting hours on the unit are any reasonable hour, but we do insist that there's a maximum of 2 people per bed.
Thanks to Ron Gardner of Cheltenham for that. Let's meet the all-star teams. Please welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Andy Hamilton. Opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Sandy Toksvig. Francis, your first question. Which incredibly popular show won this year's Best Radio Programme Award in the prestigious... No, that was just a little...
Oh, what a shame, I knew the answer to that one.
Francis, Bob the President, can he fix it?
Bob, haha, I got it. There's been a general election in Zimbabwe, and this megalomaniac dictator has crushed the opposition. Oh, no, that was our general election last year, sorry. They've had an election out there, and the South African observers said that it was all OK. But the EU is not very happy about it and said it jolly well wasn't. And even old Bush, who finds it very hard to focus on more than one thing at a time, has taken his eye off Iraq for a moment to get in a state about this. He said it was outrageous to go around stealing elections blatantly like this. You should do it properly. Have a token recount in Florida to make it look fair. And they're going to take sanctions against him. He's joined the Axis of Evil, possibly, even. I don't know. But anyway, he's won it. There was a big swing, I think, in Bulawayo South, wasn't there? The Natural Law Party candidate lost his deposit.
There were allegations, weren't there, of some irregularities at the polling booths, inasmuch as that there weren't any polling booths in quite a few places.
There's lots to learn from Mugabe, I think.
I think there is something to learn. I mean, I think if you arrest the leader of the opposition, that's quite a useful way to get rid of him. And we could do that here if anybody knew what he looked like.
Well, he looks like Francis.
Yeah.
Except in one crucial respect. President Mugabe is accused of fixing the elections partly by torturing his opponents under the principle one man, one vote. Andy, which premier announced the second coming of the third way?
Oh, this is Tony Blair, our wonderful leader, who made a speech about nothing. It was about enabling people to fulfil their potential. And I think actually it was about creating the potential for people to fulfil their potential. The nearest thing I could see to any substance in the speech is he said, we are now entering the third phase of New Labour, which made it sound rather like a disease.
Third phase, everyone knows what that means. Surely to goodness.
What is it then?
Well, we had the second coming last year with the general election.
When do you come off the antibiotic?
And next year we... next year he's going to go into the fourth dimension. He likes that sort of thing.
He said he wanted to tell people what we stand for.
Pretty much everything.
They stand for anything. Yeah. We stand for Hindus and what? That's his exact words.
The sweet Tony Blair relaunched New Labour. This proved to be a very popular move until it was revealed that the relaunch didn't involve a space shuttle and a one-way trip to the moon. 2 points to Andy. After Andy, Sandy, who must learn to obey the Cheneys of command.
The Cheneys of command? Is this to do with the Vice President, Mr. Cheney?
Mm-hmm.
Who's been over here? I'm trying to think what he's been talking about. He's been talking about, like Mr. Blair, nothing much in particular, and his ambition to do preemptive nuclear strikes on 7 countries, which I always think is best to be in there first. I like the countries that they've chosen because they're all countries with very short names, because then Bush can remember them. Iran and Iraq, nice little short names, and the Labour MPs are a little unhappy about this, and 90 of them have signed a thing saying that we should treat this with caution. And I like this idea. I think we should say to Bush, you want to be careful with those nuclear weapons, you could have somebody's eye out. And indeed, the list is something of a problem because the Americans seem unable to remember who's on the list. They did a survey of the Americans to find out who is the Axis of Evil, and apparently France is 5th. which I can't comment on because I do holiday there. But
do you think they chose seven because seven's a lucky number? Do you think that's what
But also, if it's seven, then Bush can count to seven on his fingers and have three left to get a pretzel out of his throat. So.
I'm going to do something a bit controversial, which has never been done on the news quiz, which is advocate assassination. Because it seems to me that clearly, given that America has decided that they're going to go to war with Iraq, if you've made that moral choice, then surely it would be morally far more defensible to eliminate one dangerous psychopath than 50,000 or whatever it will be innocent Iraqis. And there are many ways you could assassinate Saddam Hussein, because if you watch him, he's always surrounded by flowers. He's a florist's dream. So all you've got to do is come up with an exploding flower. Yeah. Or an intelligent missile that can home in on chrysanthemums.
Or a bee.
A bee. A
small nuclear bee is what you
want. A highly trained bee with a lethal sting.
Yeah.
Can I just say, it's been nice knowing you, Andy, because I think you may be getting an interflora delivery yourself.
U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney faithfully followed George Bush's orders this week and began his 11-country tour of the Middle East in London. He spoke to Mr. Blair about the potential threat posed by what he called a marriage of terror, which was taken to be a reference to Neil and Christine Hamilton. Alan, who wasn't having a punt at Cheltenham this year?
Cheltenham is an Irish event. I mean, they come over here and they file past Cheltenham Ladies' College and get extremely excited and very drunk and have these wonderful tents. And this year, they've brought punts and euros. And I think the bookmakers, with that amazing calculation the bookmakers have, they can turn anything into anything because there's money in it. And I mean, they know far more than Gordon Brown about how to convert money and where convergence comes. And they took all their bets in euros. They took all the Irish bets in euros and paid out in pounds. Now, there are millions and millions of euros in Cheltenham, which is the last place in the world you imagine to be Eurocentrist, but it now is, because they got all this money.
But it was very odd, because they said they had issued a lot of leaflets and brochures for the bookies to explain to them what euros look like. Well, no, I've seen euros, and it's not difficult, because it's a bit of paper and it says euro on it. and it's got a number, and that gives you a rough idea of what it's worth. I was a bit concerned about the level of intelligence of the horse racing community.
Irish racers at the Cheltenham Festival this week were able to make their punts in euros instead of punts. The popularity of the Cheltenham Festival among Irish people is unsurprising. It's the only competition with more Irish winners than the Eurovision Song Contest. We start round two with an extract from an obituary seen in the Tenby Observer.
She smoked players untipped to the end. On St David's Day, her ashes are to be dropped from the Severn Bridge.
Many thanks to the anonymous Tenby Observer readers who sent that in. Andy, whose new educational creed is creation, creation, creation?
This is outrageous. This is the story that did get me cross this week, because Tony Blair, never mind how he might be underperforming on the economy or on issues of democracy, this was shameful what he did this week, because there is a school which has got a pretty pro-Christian agenda where creationism, i.e. the belief that the world was made but 2,000 years ago, is being given equal weight to the theory of evolution. Now, I know the theory of evolution is just a theory, but it stands up quite well. It has a certain beauty and logic to it, whereas creationism is a load of mumbo-jumbo. And Tony Blair was asked about it in the House, and he came up with this weasel-worded answer where he said, oh, it's quite a good school, they get good results, and I think we should encourage diversity in schools. What, teaching nonsense is diversity? I could run a school and get good results, but if I teach the kids that actually all women are vampires, does that matter? Ludicrous, absolutely ludicrous. And the reason it gets me quite wound up is because creationism in religion, that's fine, but it's not science. They should learn the difference between a theory and a belief. You know, and the difference between a belief and a theory is you're allowed to kill people for a belief. And given that we've got a bit of a surfeit of religious nutters around at the moment, I think Tony Blair was craven in the extreme.
They what are. I think is lovely, though, is hearing Andy not sitting on the fence at all this evening. Going to kill Saddam Hussein, and the letters you're going to get, darling, from the creationists. I think, to be fair to Tony Blair, what he was saying is that this school gets very good results in creationism, GCSE, whatever they call them now, and that's unusual. They're probably the only school that does well in that.
Yeah, I've seen that creationism GCSE paper, actually. It's very good. The question I saw was, how did God get all the dinosaurs onto the ark?
But they weren't. I mean, if the world began a few thousand years ago, presumably they don't accept the existence of dinosaurs.
Ah, no, you see, there is trendy new wave creationism.
Oh,
that says, never mind clever clogs Darwin, they may not be mentioned in the Bible, but there were two Tyrannosaurus rexes on the ark as well. So nerdy nerd to all you, nobby no-mate scientists.
They used their tails as a bit of a rudder at the back. They were successful.
Of course, most people now recognise that God didn't create the world in 6 days. It takes Tony Blair 5 years and 112 focus groups just to start reform of the health service, for heaven's sake. The school's head teacher, Mr. Nigel McQuoid, argues that evolutionism and creationism are both faith positions. A shock to those of us who thought faith positions was a porn star in Debbie Does Dallas. 2 points to Andy. In fact, why not 3 points? Because it was argued with such passion. To compensate for the fact that he's going to be buried in hate mail. Sandy, you're a white, middle-class person from Surrey. What
I am.
Heck are you doing here?
I know, it's very odd that I'm on the BBC at all, because I'm the scourge of the BBC and the sort of person who shouldn't be allowed to have a licence fee at all. I have to be very careful here, because obviously I work for the BBC, and in his great wisdom, I think the chairman of the BBC, Gavin Davis, has been quoted out of context. At least I hope so. All those moaning minis about the BBC turn out to be irritatingly white, middle-class people from the South who are well-educated, unlike the people from the North who have no education at all, which seems to be the tone of it. And he's had to backtrack rather furiously on this and, in fact, come out with a statement that it isn't just those people who are critical of the BBC. In fact, everyone is. And he's really sorry about that. But anyway, people from the South do very well because we've got the Archers. That was the sort of tone of it. Bless his white, middle-class self.
It's very odd. I mean, I am middle-aged, middle-class, white, reasonably well-educated, and I'm also responsible for dumbing it down. I'm caught in a sort of trap over the BBC because I'm both a critic and the cause. But when I think of Gavin Davis, I think of a man who takes home $500,000 a year from Morgan Stanley, has about 18 houses, and probably has never met anybody north of...
Well, it's clear he hasn't, because he had this charming idea that all Asians are teenagers and they live on the streets. This is his fantastic unpatronising way of referring to various ethnic minorities in the country.
What he likes about them is they never criticise Radio 4.
Well, of course...
It did come as a surprise to me.
But also, if, as Gavin Davis believes, they live on the streets, they obviously never watch telly either, unless it's through the window of a TV showroom. How can they watch it on the streets?
But speaking as a black working-class guy from Barnsley, I think what Gavin is saying is, let's get the beeb out on the streets, man. I was bewildered.
Well, the news quiz went to Wells a few weeks ago.
This question of TV executives patronising the audience. When I was starting out as a comedy writer, I wrote a joke and the producer said to me, "It's terribly funny, Andy, but I think it's a bit too clever." And I said, "Well, why do you say it's too clever?" He said, "Well, I don't think that my granny in Bolton would understand it." So I, feeling a bit mischievous, said, "Well, let's give her a ring." And then he said, "Well, you can't ring her, she's dead." And he said, "Then anyway, she wasn't from Bolton. I was only using that as an example." So I complained that I felt that if my gags had to be funny enough to make a theoretical dead granny laugh, I thought that was an unreasonable hurdle for me to clear. But it is the curse of the BBC that they're forever flagellating themselves with the notion that working people don't like complicated stuff. They just want makeover shows.
And that's true, I think. I frankly can't get enough of those makeover shows. I realise now I sit at home and I am quite literally watching paint dry. And, can't get enough of it.
After Chairman Gavin Davis made his comments, there was a storm of protest, to which Mr. Davis replied, "Is it 'cause I is black?" Alan, why are those feuding Campbells and McDonald's at it again?
Oh, it's about Glencoe. No, it's about post-Glencoe. They have given either... One of them is a soup, I remember. I think it's the Campbells this time that have got command of something in Scotland, which is enormously significant. And it would upset the McGregors if they gave a damn about it.
It's the tourist centre that actually marks the spot where the Campbells murdered the McDoobries, McDougals, whatever they were called. No disrespect McGregor. To Scotland, I'm white, middle class from the south. The McGregors and...
McDonald's.
I'm so sorry. One was a soup and one was a burger. And,
You thought I was going to get hate mail.
The soup people... In 1398, went in for a free burger and in the night killed the burger people. And now the soup people have been put in charge of the tourist centre and the burger people couldn't be more annoyed about it. That's roughly Scottish history in a nutshell.
Is New Squid going to Glasgow this year?
Not anymore. The Campbell clan have spent more than 300 years trying to live down their image of sneaky, duplicitous backstabbers, and then along comes Alistair and spoils it for everyone. Francis, Tory MP gets woman in the club. Why is this news?
It's an MP called, I think, Robert Walter?
Yes.
A man of whom I'd never heard until this week, who's got this wife... who gave him an ultimatum when they were engaged. She said, either you resign from the Carlton Club or the marriage is off, basically. And he made his choice. He married her. Though he was actually a feminist crusader in the Carlton Club. He had voted and lobbied for the admission of women to the club. But he's left it now. And he's brought in a private members bill to say that women should be allowed into all clubs everywhere, I think.
It was like Nuffield. You remember that golf club story when Lord Nuffield's wife was turned away? So he bought the golf club and... lovely story, the one at Nettlebed. But I think
like
it was Mrs. Walters who precipitated this, because she wasn't being served.
There's a very odd...
But why would she want to go to a golf club for a drink?
There is a possibility, Francis, that she wanted to play golf. I don't know.
Do women do that?
Do women do that? It's a curious thing, isn't it? Yes. You'll be getting letters and they'll be from me. I think it's marvellous that they're going to get rid of this. Although, I have to say, because I have played many times with a friend at a particular golf club which will remain nameless, and I was never allowed to go into the bar after we'd played, because only the men, obviously men are only strong enough to buy things with lemon slices in them. And actually it was quite nice, because he would say, you can't go into the bar. I said, well, you go in, I'll have a gin and tonic.
I think they do have one woman member at the Carlton, who's Mrs. Thatcher, who was given honorary membership, so that is the drawback.
No, we're talking about women here.
Tory MP Robert Walter has proposed a bill abolishing sex discrimination in private clubs after bar staff at a golf club refused to serve his wife-to-be, Barbara Gorner. Ms. Gorner has not yet considered the possibility she was actually banned because she was about to marry a Tory MP. Ms. Gorner was not only the driving force behind the new legislation, she even drafted it, which is not bad for a woman, eh? 2 points to Francis. Before we start the final round, here's an item from the January issue of The Morris Dancer.
Was there a February issue?
Noel and Chambers now discovered that the old broom dance was still performed on festive occasions at the Carpenter's Anus in New Biggin Street.
I'd like to see that, I'll tell you. I think there's a new single in there for Will.
Thanks to Ray Knight of Thaxted for that. Frances, which 5-year-old has earned more than her share of riches over the past year?
Ah, it's a little girl who has beaten the stock exchange at its own game. And it's odd because she's been mostly praised in the kind of papers that would like their readers to believe that the stock exchange is a very serious thing concerned with long-term investment and so forth, and not just another form of lottery. But her technique for deciding which companies to invest in was loads of scraps of paper would be dropped from a balcony and she would catch five of them, and then they would, her school, I assume, notionally invested £1,000 in them and made pots of money, notionally, at least out of it. And this is the most effective way of choosing which companies to back. The only problem is if you're the one standing underneath the balcony catching these things, occasionally when the prices go down, you get the odd stockbroker landing on your head as well.
Tia Laverne Roberts, the Teletubbies generation's answer to George Soros, a sounded city experts when her random picks of stock outperformed those of the Square Mile's finest. She made it plain her astounding success wouldn't change her life at all before she whizzed off in her chauffeur-driven Porsche for lunch at the Manoir aux Quatre Saisons. Tia has already taken readily to her role as an infant financier. Only last night her parents caught her shouting into her phone, "Can't talk now, I'm on the choo-choo and we're running late."
Gavin Davis is going to love the joke about Manoir aux Quatre Saisons, isn't he?
Breakfast, lunch and dinner there every day. I think he's one of the richest men in the world, isn't he?
Gavin Davis made a lot of money on the markets employing child labour five-year-olds to seek... That's a well-known thing. It's just no paper's been brave enough to print it yet.
The Far Eastern sweatshops. They pour over the FT every morning and have to buy stock.
Taiwanese children lobbing bits of paper down staircases.
I'm not speaking because I know the tape's still running.
I don't care. I've got Saddam Hussein after me.
Andy, which Labour love...
Can you not call me Andy, please? I'm Topaz.
Our next question goes to an anonymous contributor. Which Labour love dared to diss Delia?
This is Glenys Kinnock. It looked like quite a funny speech, I thought. And I remember reading it and thinking, I'll steal those gags one day. No, it was. She made a speech about how real women don't have time to do those elaborate recipes that Delia prepares on the television. They just get the instant smash out of the cupboard and stick it in the microwave and leave it on the table with a note for Neil. And apparently it caused a stir. I don't know, Delia got upset and got out one of her heavier ladles and went after her. I don't know, and then Delia said that she'd heard that Glenys voted for Gareth, and it all went off and they had some big spat. But anyway, yes, it was a non-story about Delia Smith being offended by Glenys Kinnock.
I think she was right, though. Real women do not have time to do all the things that Delia suggests because they're too busy trying to get a bloody drink at the golf club.
Delia's oversimplified, easy-to-understand books for beginners have proved so successful she's now been commissioned to write How to Do Foreign Policy for George W. Bush. Sandy Toksvig, are you chewing? If so, why should you carry on?
I love people who have time for these scientific surveys. What it is, it's expanding the horizons of science into the world of chewing gum. People who've thought, no, we've sorted out creationism, so we'll move on to something more interesting. And it's to do with correct mastication, if I may use that word, on Radio 4. Sorry, Gavin, three syllables.
Four syllables.
Actually, four, yes. Sorry, my maths was crap. Apparently, if you chew gum, this makes your memory better. And they've done loads of tests on this, and they divided it up into three groups of people who were doing memory tests. One group who were chewing gum, and one group who were doing sham chewing. So they were just pretending to chew, which is always fun. And and then people who weren't chewing at all. And of the people who were chewing, 80% remembered things rather better, 10% it had no effect at all, and the other 10% couldn't get it off the desk when they'd finished the test or something. It's to do with your hippocampus. It's your hippocampus in your brain, apparently. If you masticate, and I mean that in the nicest possible way, if you masticate, it helps you to remember things. And certainly, boys have been telling me that for years. I don't think spearmint or peppermint or whatever makes a difference. I think it's...
Yes, a conference held by the British Psychological Society. Researchers from the University of Northumbria claimed chewing gum could help students do better in exams. Said of President Gerald Ford, he couldn't walk and chew gum at the same time, unlike the present incumbent, who can't chew a pretzel while watching TV. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
This is from the Bristol Evening Post. Police are investigating reports of a naked man who was seen running through woods in Portishead. The man was white, in his early to mid-20s, thin, with dark curly hair.
Andy.
This is sent in by Lucy Darnford of Richmond, North Yorkshire. It's from the Radio Times. It's a billing for case notes. It says, Dr. Graham Easton assesses an intermediate heart unit in Liverpool and visits a course on which GPs are learning how to do some ear, nose and threat procedures.
Sandy.
Well, I'm indebted to Judy Al for this one, and it's from the letters page of the Daily Mail. Going to bed the other night, I noticed people in my shed stealing things. I phoned the police, but was told no one was in the area to help. They said they would send someone over as soon as possible. I hung up. A minute later, I rang again. Hello, I said. I called you a minute ago because there were people in my shed. You don't have to hurry now because I've shot them. Within minutes, there were half a dozen police cars in the area. Plus helicopters and an armed response unit. And they caught the burglars red-handed. One of the officers said, I thought you said you'd shot them, to which I replied, I thought you said there was no one available.
Alan.
There's an obituary in the Sydney Morning Herald. This Colonel Leo Corbett, who has died at the age of 96, was a likeable man of contrast. Beneath the tough exterior of the former commando leader lay the poet, the fabric designer, the sense of humour that saw him through three bankruptcies, and the ingenuity that produced Australia's first Venetian blind.
Thank you all. Now let's look at the final score. For security reasons, I won't reveal the panellists' names, but the people being pursued by Irish people and gays got 16 points. The people who will be shot by creationists and Saddam Hussein are this week's winners with 17 points. And before we leave you, here's an item from the International Tour Managers Newsletter sent in by Anthony Hill.
A Nigerian arrested in Roosendaal, the Netherlands, was carrying 186 false papers, including 29 Nigerian passports, 30 British passports, 74 Dutch work permits, and 18 birth certificates. Police say they haven't yet identified.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Wheen, Andy Hamilton, Sandy Toksvig and Alan Corran. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by George Poles, Paul McKenzie, Simon Littlefield and Dave Cohen. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.